My name is Nicholas. I am 9 years old. Today is January 7th, 2019. And I am speaking with Christina Pham, who is my mom. We are recording this interview in San Francisco, California. Mom, would you mind telling me what you do for a living?
I am a physician, and I specifically doctor women. So I'm a women's health physician.
Mom, could you tell me why you chose to be a women's health physician?
Let's see. When I was in medical school, I was placed in this very same clinic for what's called my longitudinal clerkship. And what that means is that my medical school lets me choose one clinic where I'm going to spend all year. So usually in medical school, the structure is that like we'll do one thing for like a month and then we move on to another thing. Right, so usually I do surgery for a month, and then I move on to gastroenterology for a month. But this particular thing was me needing to choose something where I go back to that same clinic and hopefully see patients over and over again, once or twice a week for an entire year. So first, they placed me in this ophthalmology clinic because I thought I wanted to be an ophthalmologist. And then I was in there for a while and I really, really hated it. And so they put me into the clinic that I'm working in now. So as a medical student, I was working there. And it was a clinic that specialized in primary care for women. And I found that I really, really liked it. And so when I went on to residency, my residency was kind of a general medicine residency, but I was able to just see more women. And so I told all the people in the emergency department, I told everybody that if they had a female patient, that they could send them to me. And then I would open more slots in my schedule only to see women.
Why did you hate ophthalmology?
Oh, gosh. Because they put me in a clinic with an ophthalmologist who was very, very old, and so he wasn't so interesting anymore. I think he was just kind of tired. It was a doctor who was very, very famous, but who only did glaucoma. And so literally he only saw people for this one particular eye disease. It was like all old people. So like the doctor was old and all the patients were old. And I was like, oh my God. And he didn't teach very well. It was just so boring. And the thing is, when you're in an ophthalmology office, the light was off a lot of the time. So like most of the day, you're just sitting in a clinic room that was like really, really dark.
Was there any light?
Well, I mean, they would have to turn off the light because they have specific, you know, lights that they shine in your eye. And so they have to turn off the room light so that they can use these things to look in your eye. And so it was just really boring.
What steps did you take to become a doctor?
Well, let's see. So I first had to finish a group of classes called pre-medical classes in college. So when I was at Stanford, I had to take things like biology and chemistry and statistics and all this stuff, right? My major in college was human biology, but you kind of don't have to major in biology to go to medical school. And then after doing the pre-medical coursework, you have to take this test called the MCAT, which is the MCAT, College assessment test or something like that. I don't know. It's MCAT. You have to study really, really hard for that test. And I took it and I got a pretty good score. And then, actually, when I graduated from college, I didn't think I was going to go to medical school. I was in business for a while. So I was a management consultant for probably like 2 years. And then I worked at an internet startup for like 1 or 2 years. And only after that did I decide. Oh, and then I was a Fulbright Fellow in Vietnam. So I like got this like a really big scholarship award that paid me for 1 year to go to Vietnam to like learn stuff in Vietnam. And so when I came back, I thought I was going to go to business school. And then I decided maybe not business school. And then I went through a whole period of not knowing what I wanted to do. And finally I was like, well, maybe I should go to medical school. So then I had to retake that test, the MCAT, again, which was a big, big deal because it was a very hard test. And then I applied to all these medical schools. And so then I got into a lot of really wonderful schools and decided that we wanted to come and live in California. And so I accepted at UCSF, which is here, mm-hmm. where we work right now. And then for residency, after I graduated from medical school, where I had all three kids, mm-hmm. I then did my residency in internal medicine at Harvard. Daddy also did his residency at Harvard. We both graduated in 2014, and then I came back here to work as an attending. So an attending is a physician who sees patients but also teaches medical students and residents. Oh. Right. And so I became an assistant professor here at UCSF.
Oh.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Is being a doctor your favorite job out of all the jobs you've done?
Yes, absolutely. So I've done a couple of different jobs over time. I've been like a tutor. I've been like, you know, kind of like sports instructor. I've been an account manager. I've been a consultant. I've done research. I've done a lot of different things, but most definitely, doctoring is my favorite job.
Can you tell me about a teacher or other adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up?
While I was growing up, I think Omwat, you know, definitely had a big impact on me because he was a physician and it exposed me to the hard path to become a physician, but also like the very kind of like secure and good life being a physician brings, right? You have to study really, really hard, but then you graduate with this amazing ability to really help people like every single day. And he liked his job and he made enough to take care of all of us, not only in my family, but also in like Bung Wai's family. Like, he took care of like a lot of people. And so I think that definitely made an impression on me. Yeah, it was well respected. It was kind of a very clear path. And it's just very easy to see and to feel the good that you're doing in the world as a physician.
Can you tell me about the worst person you've ever worked for or with?
Okay, I remember this very clearly. The attending physician of the ICU in my residency was probably one of the worst human beings that I ever worked for, because he was like a very abusive, like an emotionally and mentally abusive person, where he would just like yell at you and just make you feel so bad about yourself. So I was the senior resident, and he, and you know, so as a senior resident, I'm the senior, but I have like someone working for me who is an intern or junior, mm-hmm. right? And he would make us present, and he would just yell and just like be so verbally abusive to my intern, to the point where on one morning she just stopped presenting and she walked away and she wouldn't come back, and she was like crying and crying and crying. And I remember feeling so scared of him for all like the abusive language that he would use with us, that, so I was on an overnight rotation. So I worked from like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., more like 7 p.m. to like 10 a.m. Anyway, and I remember at one point in the nighttime, I would get stomach aches. And I didn't know what they were for. Like, I just thought I got stomach aches. But then in hindsight, I realized that it was because I was so anxious about the morning coming when he would like come, and then he'd like be mean to my intern and, you know, therefore to me, and then I'd feel so bad. So I just like would get stomach aches, and that was like the weirdest thing ever, because at one point my senior resident told me that I should just go down to the emergency room so they could, you know, do some testing and see if there was anything wrong with me. But there's nothing wrong with me. And it turned out that I had stomach aches because this guy was so mean, and I was like just like so anxious about him being mean to my intern. But anyway, so it turned out, so we complained, or, you know, we were interviewed by the directors of the program because they heard what had happened, that, you know, that this man was like very, very just mean. This teacher was incredibly mean to his students. And then one day they called him to their office and they fired him. It was like a huge shock to like the entire community, because it was crazy, because nobody thought that our voices could matter that much. But the administrators really valued our input. And so after we told them how terrible he was, they literally fired him. And that was that. It's crazy.
What are you proud of? What are you proudest of professionally in your life?
Professionally, one of the things I'm most proud of is that I had all three pregnancies and all three births of you guys within 5 years of medical school. So many people graduate medical school in 5 years. And I graduated medical school in 5 years and had three children. Three pregnancies, three births. That was like a really, really, really big deal. And that is a big testament to all kind of the family who supported me, including Ombongwai. They really, really helped so much. And Daddy, who is also incredibly supportive. Yeah, but I came into medical school with zero children, and I graduated with you three in the class picture. And then I guess I'm also very proud of the fact that I started, I created a whole clinic curriculum and educational curriculum for my students by putting together a diabetes clinic specifically for my patients who had poorly controlled diabetes, and I taught them a lot and helped them change their life and change the way that they eat and work and exercise with this diabetes group.
Are there any lessons your work life has taught you?
Yes. I think One of the lessons that my work life has taught me is to be kind to yourself and believe in yourself. I think that in medicine, the culture in medicine can be pretty hard because people can expect a lot from you and not be very kind. And it's strange because in medicine, we're taught to take care of other people, but the culture of medicine is not kind. The culture of medicine does not take care of its physicians. And so we were taught in training to not take care of ourselves. We were taught in training that the patient comes first, always, 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 and that we are expected to give all the sacrifices. And the culture of medicine also just kind of like beats you down and doesn't often reward you for your hard work. And over time, in being an attending physician, I realized that that's not right. You know, in a profession where we are taught to take care of others, we should also be taking care of each other and taking care of ourselves in the same way. And so I've learned to speak up more, ask for the things that I need and the things that are right, because I learned that when I'm happier as a professional, that I can give so much more to my patients.
Can you tell me about one person who has influenced you during your life?
Yes. One of the biggest people in medicine is my mentor, David Hirsch. He actually was Daddy's attending at Daddy's medical school, at Harvard Medical School. And I got to know him, and I was actually his patient. So he was my primary care physician, and I was his patient. And when he doctored me, I was so inspired, and I felt like, gosh, I really, really want to be a physician like Dr. Hirsch. And so I knew where he taught. So when I was graduating medical school, my goal was to be trained in the hospital that Dr. Hirsch taught at. And so that's what I did. He taught at Cambridge Health Alliance at Harvard, and that's where I trained, because I wanted to be the type of physician that he was. He was just so caring and so present and so deeply conscientious. Whenever there was a health issue, he would go above and beyond to understand it and explain it to me in a way that felt very true. And so in my own practice, when I'm a doctor, I try to be as much like him as possible.
Why were you Dr. Hirsch's patient? What happened to you?
Everybody needs a primary care physician, just like you have Dr. Takayama, who is your pediatrician, and so that's your primary care physician while you are a child. And so when you are an adult, you will also need a primary care physician. And that's the type of doctor that I am to all these women.
Oh.
So whenever, you know, someone like Keats or Tanya or Jill, they all have a physician who they go to first. So I'm the physician that people go to first.
Oh. What do you think makes adults different from kids?
That's an interesting question. What do you think makes an adult different from kids?
Adults are usually more responsible, and they are more mature than kids are. And adults are 18 and over. And yeah.
I think all of those things are reasons that children are different from adults. I think when I became 18 or when I became 19, I don't think I felt like an adult. I definitely still felt like a child. I was still in school. I was away at college. So, you know, we're not kind of controlling what I was doing from day to day, but I definitely did not feel super responsible. Sure, I didn't pay tuition. I didn't, financially, I was still dependent on Omongwai. They were still giving me money every month. All the big life decisions, I still kind of like ran by them. I think I felt like I became an adult after I, you know, had Kaylin, because that was the first child. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden you were like super responsible for a whole nother human. And so if you were not responsible, then there would be like big consequences. Whereas like if it was just yourself and you're not responsible, well, you know, maybe you get a little hungry or maybe you don't have laundry or something, but there's not anything like really huge. I think I felt more like an adult when we bought a house. Like when we like had a house and a mortgage to pay for and three kids and having you guys like go to school, that's when we felt, oh gosh, we're like really adults now. Yeah. So I think the first thing you said is really accurate. I don't know that I feel that age makes you an adult, even though I think that's true legally. That does make you an adult after age 21. But I think the level of responsibility and level of maturity, which both of those things you did say, I think those definitely are marked differences between adults and children.
Thank you for letting me interview you, Mom.
Thank you for interviewing me, and thank you for being interested in my professional path. I love you.
Love you.
Perfect. Are you sure? Yes.